All right, you want to start it over because I screwed up? There we are. To be lies, and all the joy within you dies. Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Don't you love somebody to love? You better find somebody to love. Grace Slick, Jefferson Airplane, Someone to Love. Yeah, I told Jason White Rabbit. That's why he played White Rabbit. Jason, see, this is why you don't pick the music. Because we wanted that line, when the truth turns out to be lies. Because that's the theme about the left today. Which brings us to this topic. When conservatives, including me, said after 2009 that the left would try to bring back the Fairness Doctrine, was poo-pooed as they're not going to do that, they can't do that. Well, not the FCC Fairness Doctrine that existed until April 1987. And of course, a year after that fell, the Fairness Doctrine wasn't a single rule. It was a patchwork of rulings, which basically said broadcasters had to present both sides of every issue. So you couldn't have shows such as this one, the national talk shows, and so on, that fell in April 87. By August 88, Rush Limbaugh was on the air nationally, and within the next year, conservative talk radio would start sweeping the country, and by the mid-90s, it was a major force. You've got two things going on at the same time. You've got liberals trying to say talk radio is dying, and at the same time, they're trying to kill it. If it's really dying, why try to kill it? Because it's not really dying. On the one hand, yeah, Rush Limbaugh's day is come and gone. Blah, 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 blah. Nobody listens to talk radio except for the tens of millions that listen to conservative talk radio. Blah, 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 blah. And then quietly, they're trying to kill it because they know what they're saying publicly is a lie, when the truth turns out to be lies. Just another example of that so far in the show today. This from Paul Bedard at the Washington Examiner, I believe it is. FEC chair warns that conservative media face regulations just as political action committees do. Government officials reacting to the growing voice of conservative news outlets, especially on the internet, are angling to curtail the media's exemption from federal election laws governing political organizations. PACs can't specifically endorse or reject a candidate. This, applying it to the media, would be a potentially chilling intervention the chairman of the Federal Elections Commission is vowing to fight. I think there are impulses in the government every day to second guess and look into the editorial decisions of conservative publishers, warned FEC Chairman Lee E. Goodman in an interview. The right has begun to break the left's media monopoly, particularly through new media outlets like the internet, and I sense that some on the left are starting to rethink the breadth of media exemption and internet communications, he added. Noting the success of sites like the Drudge Report, Goodman said that protecting conservative media, especially those on the internet, matters to me because I see the future going on to the democratization of media largely through the internet. They can compete with the big boys now, and I've seen storm clouds that the second you start to regulate them, there is at least the possibility of indeed proclivity for selective enforcement. So we need to keep the media free and the internet free. All media has long benefited from an exemption from FEC rules, thereby allowing outlets to pick favorites in elections and promote them without any limits or disclosure requirements like PACs. But Goodman cited several examples where the FEC, that's the Federal Election Commission, has considered regulating conservative media, including Sean Hannity's radio show and Citizen United's movie division. These efforts to lift the media exemption died in split votes at the politically evenly divided board, often with Democrats seeking regulation. Liberals over the years have also pushed for a change in the FCC's Fairness Doctrine, and we talked about that. So the Federal Elections Commission could decide
what I do, what other conservative talk show hosts do, should come under the same type of regulation as political action committees. Now, the concern here is largely the internet, and I understand that because that is growing, and individual voices can blog or do whatever. That is the democratization of the media. He's actually right about that. And right now, the conservative blogosphere and conservative talk radio work together very, very well, and conservative radio is branching out. I have my own blog. I write for a subscription blog and, you know, website, and so on. They will try to do this. Here's another example of this. The real bastion of where the left is trying to silence the right. Daniel Henninger, haven't used him in a while. How Obama unleashes the left, his Wonderland column, in today's Wall Street Journal. In the U.S., the politics of the left versus the right rolls on with the predictability of traffic jams at the George Washington Bridge. It's a lot of honking until now. All of a sudden, the left has hit ramming speed across a broad swath of American life. In the universities, in politics, and in governments, people fingered as out of line with the far left's increasingly bizarre claims are being hit hard. Commencement speaker bans are obligatory. Former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice withdrew as Rutgers speaker after 2 months of protest over Iraq, the left's long-sought replacement for the Vietnam War. Brandeis terminated its invitation to Somali writer Hirsi Ali, whose criticisms of radical Islam violated the school's core values. Azusa Pacific postponed an April speech by political scientist Charles Murray to avoid hurting our faculty and students of color. Come again? It will hurt them? Oh, yes. In a recent New Republic essay, Jenny Jarvie described the rise of trigger warnings that professors are expected to post with their courses to avoid traumatizing students. Oberlin College, earlier this year, proposed that its teachers be aware of racism, classism, sexism, heterosexism, cissexism, ableism, and other issues of privilege and oppression. The co-chair of Oberlin's Sexual Offense Policy Task Force said last month that this part of the guide is now under revision. I think it's fair to say something has snapped, he writes. Mozilla co-founder Brendan Eich was driven out as CEO for donating money to support California's Prop 8. An online protest tried to kill Condi Rice's appointment to the Dropbox board of directors over internet surveillance. Incredibly, Dropbox CEO Drew Houston didn't cave. Earlier this year, faculty and students held a meeting at Vassar College to discuss a particularly bitter internal battle over the school's Boycott Israel movement. Before the meeting, an English professor announced the dialogue would not be guided by cardboard notions of civility. In other words, we're not going to actually give the other side of the right to speak. In the Harvard Crimson recently, an undergrad columnist wrote, "Let's give up on academic freedom in favor of justice. How would that work? When an academic community observes research promoting or justifying oppression, it should ensure that this research does not continue by their definition of oppression." She explicitly cited for suppression the work of conservative Harvard government professor Harvey Mansfield. It's obvious the far left has decided there are no longer constraints on what it can do to anyone who disagrees with it. How did this happen? Who let the dogs out? The answer is not university president. The answer is that the Obama administration let the dogs out. The trigger event was an agreement signed last May between the federal government and the University of Montana to resolve a Title IX dispute over a sexual assault case. Every college administrator in the U.S. knows about this agreement. Indeed, there are three separate detailed Montana documents that were signed jointly, and this is unusual, by the civil rights divisions of the Justice Department and Education Departments, remarked DOJ's Jocelyn Samuels. The government is stronger when we speak with one voice. That's real muscle. But read the agreement. It is Orwellian. The agreement orders the school to retain an equity consultant. Yes, there is such a thing. To advise it indefinitely on compliance. The school must, with the equity consultant, conduct annual climate surveys, It will submit the results to the United States. The agreement describes compliance in mind-numbing detail, but in fact, the actual definition world it creates is vague. Definitional world. It says, the term sexual harassment means unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature, but there are also definitions for sexual assault and gender-based harassment. All of this is detailed writ called guidance, as in missile. No constitutional lawyer could read this agreement and not see it in the mind of the Queen of Hearts. Sentence first, verdict afterwards. Indeed, the U.S. Education Department felt obliged to assert that the agreement is entirely consistent with the First Amendment. First Amendment. First Amendment? It's more like a fatwa. The Obama administration has issued a federal hunting license to deputize fanatics at any university in America. They will define who gets accused and on what basis. The White House enabled these forces again last week, releasing the Education Department's list of 55 colleges that are under investigation for possible Title IX violations. Not formally cited, but under investigation. This list includes such notorious animal houses as Catholic University, Swarthmore, Knox College, Carnegie Mellon, and Harvard Law. In truth, every school in America is effectively on the list. Make no mistake, universities under constant pressure from the Obama administration and the most driven members of their communities will comply and define due process downward. If the liability choice falls between the lawyer brigades at the Holder Justice Department or some 19-year-old student or an assistant professor who didn't post the course's trigger warning, guess who will get tossed to the Marcosian mobs at Harvard and Vassar? If it's possible for the left to have its John Birch moment, we're in it. Wave goodbye to cardboard civility. Here's what Henninger is saying. It is President Obama who started this movement. And by the way, he did publicly, and Henninger's written on this previously, the whole IRS scandal. What do you think the whole John Doe probe 2.0 in Wisconsin is about? Shutting up conservatives. I have brought this up before. This is such a chilling moment in American history. It makes McCarthyism look like a pie fight. They're not going to call you before a committee. They're going to just shut you up. They are going to marginalize voices with which they disagree. Rebecca, the gay listener who wrote the emails, she doesn't have a coherent argument, so she's just going to call me a homophobe, and then I'm supposed to shut up and admit I'm wrong. That's what I'm supposed to, even she, I don't think, realizes that's what she's doing. But that's what she's doing. That's what's going on here. I don't doubt the FEC will come after conservatives on the internet. I don't doubt the FEC will come after conservatives on the radio. Can you imagine if they assigned campaign laws to talk radio, to conservative blogs? Here's the problem. When you throw this out there, this sounds paranoid. Oh, yeah, they're coming for all conservatives. They're coming for all conservatives. I'd like your reaction to this. 406-1360, 888-455-1360. That this is real should be as obvious that climate change is bogus. And what happens to you if you try to say climate change is bogus? This is what happens. Just pot it up.
Join the Jerry Bader Facebook fan page. Go to jerrybadershow.com.